Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 18th of January. The Democratic race for the presidency in 2008 is likely to be the costliest nomination fight in Democratic history. All serious candidates for the nomination will opt out, unfortunately, of the public financing system. Candidates will pass up federal matching funds, and they will not be bound by spending limits in the nomination battle or restrictions on what can be spent in each state. The campaign could necessitate raising $500,000 each week this year, or maybe twice that much money. So, if you're not Senator Barack Obama or Senator Hillary Clinton, do you have a chance? They have an ability to gather a lot of attention, to get a lot of media attention, to raise tens of millions of dollars. Do their candidacies, and they haven't been announced yet, but it looks like it's going to happen any day now. Senator Obama's on February 10th. Senator Clinton's perhaps earlier than that. Do these candidates create a significant obstacle to those who hope to become the alternative to either of these candidates? We'll be looking at the Obama factor, the Clinton factor, the money factor, and this long, long race for the presidency, the first hour of our program today. Our guest is Professor William Mayer. He's a political science professor at Northeastern University who's written quite extensively about the nominating process, author of In Pursuit of the White House 2000, How We Choose Our Presidential Nominees, The Divided Democrats, Ideological Unity, Party Reform and Presidential Elections, In Defense of Negative Campaigning, and The Changing American Mind, How and Why American Public Opinion Changed Between 1960 and 1988. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I think we'll get a lot of calls on this. Certainly Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have attracted a great deal of attention this week, and we'll talk about why and what all that attention means. Our number, 800-486-8655. Should you be joining us in Milwaukee today, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. Professor William Mayer, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. This figure kind of knocks me out. This campaign, $500,000 each week this year, or maybe double that amount of money. That's an incredible amount of money.
Well, it is. Now, it's worth saying that for the second-tier candidates, I think the goal is not by any stretch to raise as much money as Hillary, or I'm curious to see how well Barack Obama does. I think, at least in terms of money, Hillary will easily outpace the field.
Mm.
But as I say, I don't think the goal of a second tier, a candidate like, say, John Edwards or Joe Biden, is to raise as much money as Hillary will. The goal is simply to raise enough money to run a competitive campaign in those initial set of states, particularly Iowa and New Hampshire, maybe Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do well in those, the one good thing that these other candidates have is that the combination of publicity plus the internet will allow them to raise an awful lot of money very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That was what both John McCain did in 2000 and John Kerry did in 2004.
When it comes to publicity, though, Obama's the guy, isn't he? Nobody else is attracting that kind of publicity.
Well, he's attracting it now. My sense is the press will ultimately sort of tire of that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, though, is that the goal of one of these other candidates is not to get national attention. It's to get the attention of voters in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Right.
And the good news is that you can get that even if you're not attracting a lot of national attention. On the one hand, meeting with, you know, small groups of voters. On the other hand, the local press in those two states is very good at covering the comings and goings of even these lesser candidates. So, again, there's a funny kind of a race here that's fought in the beginning, that it's partly national, but it's also partly a matter of just what's going on in these critical early states.
Right. Why is it, Professor Mayer, that Senator Hillary Clinton has been able to amass so much money?
Well, she takes a lot of money, or a lot of campaign contributing, seems to be a matter of personal networks.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, people give money to people they know, both the candidate, but also there's a handful of, not handful would be understating it, but a couple hundred really good fundraisers in both parties who have good Rolodexes or whatever the
right.
The equivalent of it is. And the bottom line is that Hillary knows a lot of these people and has a lot of them helping her. You know, if you get nothing else out of being president, you get these remarkable networks, the remarkable set of personal contacts. That was the advantage, of course, that George W. Bush had going into the 2000 campaign. In his case, as the result of all the work his father had done.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the early attention, the early interest in people like John Edwards in a place like Iowa and also Nevada. Here's a guy who announced at a weird time where he didn't get a lot of attention. They seem to like him in those two states, at least. Is it now a matter of just keeping going to the coffee clutches and going to the town hall meetings and doing it day after day for almost 2 years? Is that the way to secure a nomination for somebody who doesn't have as much money?
In a word, yes.
If I were
somebody like Edwards, that's exactly what I'd be doing. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry at the moment about the fact that I wasn't doing all that well in the national polls. And if he starts to show a lot of promise in those two states, the national press will eventually, long before the actual caucuses, they'll catch up with him.
Mm-hmm. And yet you've got Obama again, who goes to the annual steak fry hosted by Senator Tom Harkin, and Vilsack is there, and he's running for president, and nobody's interested in talking to him. Everybody surrounds Barack Obama.
Well, it's clear that Obama has a certain kind of appeal at the moment. The downside for him is that along with all this attention is going to come a fair amount of scrutiny.
Right.
And you know, he's an interesting candidate in the sense, or he has got an interesting career in the sense that he's never really been seriously challenged. He had a remarkably easy first election to the U.S. Senate because the Illinois Republican Party, in their wisdom or insanity is probably the better word for it, decided to run Alan Keyes.
Really?
Against him.
Yeah, that was kind of a crazy choice.
I still think that is an absolutely inexplicable decision on their part.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, they made it is the important point, and that gave him just an incredibly easy ride. His prior record didn't really receive any great scrutiny. But the other thing is he doesn't have a whole lot of experience campaigning, and it is at least my sense from having watched these things for a whole long time that the candidates who do best in this almost surreal atmosphere that a presidential campaign is are the candidates who have done a lot of campaigning in the past.
Mm-hmm.
John Kerry, I think, did well because he'd done a lot of campaigning. Hillary has done a lot of campaigning, and I think she will probably, weather it reasonably well. He hasn't, and I'm curious to see how he deals with the exposure.
Mm-hmm. What about this idea? Let's just look at the Democrats for a moment, not the party bosses, not the people who are hosting all the fundraisers and the people with the money, just, you know, the Democrats. I read recently that the Democrats would dearly love to elect the first woman or the first black president. What do you think of that?
No, I think that's right. I think there's a lot of Democrats. identity politics means a lot more to Democrats, I think, by and large, than Republicans.
Hmm.
And I think, for example, I think Democratic women having a woman candidate means a lot more to them than, say, Republican women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they like the symbolism of it. I think, among other things, they just love to win the presidency, period. And it so happens that probably the two leading candidates in their party at the moment are a black and a woman.
What do you think about the length of this race? This is a long one, isn't it?
Well, it's a long one. The remarkable thing is this isn't really unusual. I was looking at some numbers the other day. For example, in the 1984 Democratic nomination race, four candidates announced in February of 1983.
Mm-hmm.
I think two more announced in March. So it's very long, but it's nothing peculiar to this race. It is a really regular feature of the current presidential nomination process.
Yeah, it must be something to be a candidate spending the next 2 years. I mean, obviously, they have other jobs, some of them, but to be going to all of these fundraisers and these coffees, et cetera, for all this period of time, that's a big chunk of your life.
It is a big chunk, and if the pretty clear record from past history is that Hillary and Obama and Joe Biden and Christopher Dodd will not be able to run for the presidency and do their current jobs. They will either not get the not spend the time that they probably ought to in Iowa or New Hampshire, or more likely B, they will neglect their Senate duties.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, for example, in 2003, John Edwards and John Kerry and, to a lesser extent, Joe Lieberman made a very small percentage of the Senate roll calls that were held that year. They just didn't show up, and for Edwards and Kerry, it got worse during during 2004 itself.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, and I'm not sure where this started, but there is sort of this idea out there, Professor Mayer, that Senator Clinton has this locked up.
Yeah, I think one reason she had. I think Obama's entry into this has dampened that thought a lot. But I think that if you had looked at the race before he made clear or made waves that he was getting into it, you looked on there are two traditional indicators that people look at when they try to forecast ahead in this, and both of them actually have very good track records in terms of predicting the nominee. One is the candidate standing in the national polls.
Mm-hmm.
In most races. This didn't actually happen in 2004, but in something like eight of the last 10 races, it's been true that the candidate who was leading in the national polls went on to win the presidential nomination. And really, even going back before the 2004 election, if you asked national samples of Democrats, who would you most like to see as your party's nominee, the clear favorite was Hillary Clinton. The other indicator is who raises the most money, and again, all indications are that she will raise an enormous amount of money. So I think when you added those two things together, a lot of people said, gee, she's so far ahead of the candidates, the other candidates, she'll, she will win this thing. Now, I always thought that it was a more, I've always thought that while she has some strengths, she has some considerable weaknesses too, and I think a lot of the appeal of Obama for many Democrats, I mean, in addition to whatever else he has going for him, is that he doesn't bring all of Hillary Clinton's baggage to the election.
Right.
I think all of the scandals and problems that afflicted the Clinton administration a lot of people believe that she may have real trouble winning a general election.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that at least at the moment, and again, this is because his record hasn't really undergone the scrutiny that hers has, but I think a lot of Democrats look at him and say, you know, gee, he's a Democrat, he's liberal, he's right on the issues, we get great symbolism, but
yes.
He doesn't have Hillary's baggage.
Right. And the symbolism here is going to be something that he can use to his advantage for a long time. I think it's very interesting. He's choosing Springfield, Illinois. I'll bet you that he picks the old state capital where Lincoln gave his House Divided speech. And there's incredible symbolism in all of that.
No, I think that's right. And as I say, I think particularly with the Democrats, that symbolism is quite potent.
Yeah. Well, let's welcome phone calls. Our guest is Professor William Mayer, political science professor at Northeastern University, who's written extensively about the nominating process. We're talking about that process this hour, the amount of money that it will take on the Democratic side. And we're focusing on the Democrats right now, but bring in Republicans if you'd like. This has been a big week for media attention for Senator Hillary Clinton, just returned from Iraq and Afghanistan, and also for Senator Barack Obama, who announced that he is putting together a presidential exploratory committee and will be making an announcement on February 10. What about this process, too, the whole process about how we choose a presidential nominee? We'll talk about that. And if there's a better way or if this is a good way, does this indeed allow us to choose the candidate who we think would be the best president, or is it a flawed system? We would love to hear from you. And here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. All our lines are open at the moment. Why don't you just get one and let's talk politics. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, Calvin Trillin will be joining us. Calvin's been a staff writer for The New Yorker since 1963, and he has written about his wife. About Alice is the name of the book. It's really a lovely book. He says in the book that he thinks that she believed in the transformative power of pure, undiluted love, and I think that's what this book is all about. She died 5 years ago, and Calvin will be with us to talk about family and Alice and marriage and all of that, and love, the second hour of our show. Professor William Mayer is with us now, political science professor at Northeastern University. We're going to grab some phone calls, and we start with Marion from Wausau. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Good to talk with you. I'm calling about the term baggage that the professor is using in connection with Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much of the baggage is Republican fabricated and how much is fact.
Well, that's a matter observers would differ on how much of that. I think there are some things that there's some legitimate questions you can raise about the FBI files that surfaced in her office, about how she managed to turn $1,000 or whatever it was into $100,000 in the commodities market. But some of it I think some of it's probably, if not fabricated, at least exaggerated. My comment had less to do had much to do with perceptions, and sometimes perceptions are different than the reality, but I think there are some legitimate questions that can be raised about the Clintons' performance in the White House.
Mm-hmm. It just seems to me, in listening, that so much of the time the fabrications are the things that are repeated over and over again. Even the files turning up, not really knowing where they were, there are other things that we could speculate, too, that would not put the blame on her. I'd like to keep more of the actual campaigning on facts and reality rather than digging up old dirt.
Is she your candidate at this point, Marion?
I don't really know.
Yeah.
I've not decided, although I I think that bringing new person on, Barack Obama, is very impressive, but I really don't know enough about him to know.
Right. You're going to learn a lot pretty darn soon. Thanks very much for the call. What about this idea? It's a simple idea, but this idea that we grow tired of people after a while, Professor Mayer. So we've had the Clintons for a long time. Bill Clinton was president for 8 years. We've had the Bushes for a long time. Their time is over, and part of this interest in somebody new like Obama or like somebody else who hasn't achieved a whole lot of prominence yet is that we're looking for something fresh. We've had it with – they're sort of an old guard now, and we want a new guard.
Well, I think there is a little bit of that, but if you look at who actually wins nominations, it's typically not the the new faces. In 2000, the Democrats had a choice between a relatively new face, at least Bill Bradley,
yeah.
And the tired old Al Gore, and the tired old Al Gore cleaned his clock. In 2000, the Republicans could have gone with the new face, John McCain. Instead, they went with another one of those old Bushes. The attraction of these fresh faces can sometimes be overestimated. I think the press loves a fresh face.
Right.
It's a new story, but when you look at who actually wins votes, it's more often the particularly for the presidency, I think, which is an office that a lot of people are really kind of when push comes to shove, they may flirt with the fresh face, but it's not an office that they like to entrust to completely new hands.
Thanks, Marion, for your call. We go to Marty next from Green Bay. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say I met Barack Obama once, and I was just totally taken back of how sincere he is, and I think this is the man that's going to change the direction that this country is going in. I read his book, The Audacity of Hope, and everybody, just read it. And he offers solutions, and he offers hope for this country. He was against this war from the beginning. I have a son that's in the Marines.
Mm.
He offers solutions, and let's be honest, he represents what this country has become. I mean, it is a melting pot of all races, and his mother was white, his father was African. He's been all over the world. And when someone says to me he doesn't have experience, I want to say, you know what, there's been a lot of people in our political system that have a lot of experience, and look at what they've got us into. So let's listen to somebody who is at least thinking and is offering hope for this country. So I'm do everything I can to get Barack Obama elected president.
Okay, Professor Mayer.
Well, that represents, I think the caller, I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name.
Marty.
Has done a great job of summarizing the case for Obama.
Uh-huh.
There will be others who you can rest assured. There will be lots of people who will agree with her, and lots of people who may have a different take on the whole thing.
Yeah. It seems to me as though, and tell me what you think about this, that whoever the winning candidate is going to be, is unless there are other processes here at work, and public opinion is not something that factors into the nominating process. But you can't have day after day of hearing about bombings in Iraq and hundreds of people dying without having some kind of strategy. And I think that whoever the candidate is has got to come out with something that's going to resonate with the American people. Iraq is going to be a big issue still.
I think Iraq. Now, to be fair, one of the other problems with this lengthy nomination campaign is that the political situation can change a lot in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We really are still talking about an election that is 22 months away. And the situation in Iraq could conceivably change a fair amount between now and November 2008. As long as it stays something like it does, I agree that it will be a big issue. I think for the Democrats, it's going to be an easier issue than the Republicans. The Democratic position is clearly, let's get the troops out. We'll turn it over to the Iraqi government. I mean, there are problems with that position in some respects, but they are problems that the probably are not the public is not going to be all that. I mean, I think the public is quite sympathetic to the let's pull out the troops now position. For the Republicans, it may become a more difficult thing. But again, if the situation stabilizes a bit over the next year, and think about, for example, the change in position in Iraq between, say, February of 2003 and February of 2004, if the situation stabilizes, it could become an issue that cuts more in favor of the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that is a possibility of happening, stabilization?
Do I think? That's a good. I mean, it's a good question. I suspect. I don't think it will, but I at least hold out some hope. I think the fact that they finally got Donald Rumsfeld out is, and then the White House has at least a better sense of that they've stopped kind of whistling past the graveyard are all things are all positives.
We go next. Thanks very much, Marty, for your call. Gary from, there we go. And we have lines open at 800-486-8655. Gary from Watertown. Hi.
Yes. I was wondering, the young senator from Illinois, Obama, is I'm wondering what his religion is.
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth.
You're not sure? You think that would, people would, someone know that already?
I believe he's congregational.
Really? Congregational? He's not Islam or anything like that?
No.
I'm certain he's not Islam.
No, he's not Islam.
Because I remember that when a candidate up in Minnesota got elected to Congress just in 2006, they said he was the first Muslim in Congress.
Is that important to you, Gary, what his religion is?
Well, yeah, you read these books, about the infiltrating American politics and all that, so I'm just wondering if he wants, I was just wondering what his religion was, so.
Whoa, I don't know where that's coming from. He's infiltrating politics because he's Islam. No, his religion is out there. My understanding is that he grew up in a family that was not very religious and didn't practice and came to religion a little bit later in life. And I believe he's a United Church of Christ. I could be wrong about that, but it's a similar kind of denomination. Somebody will set the record straight here. I am certain. Is he going to run into some of that? I mean, this caller was pretty direct about this with some fairly outlandish statements here. But is there going to be an undercurrent of that? We hear about the name, the father from Kenya who did practice Islam, I believe, the middle name of Hussein. Is there an undercurrent of that people are making these wacky statements about him?
I'm not sure quite what the caller meant by that. He may have meant something a little less. You may be overreading what he was saying, I think there's a whole lot of questions about who is this guy. We know, and it's at some level we feel we know who Hillary is, it's not an. I actually don't think that the fact that he's black is going to be quite a. I don't think it's going to be the problem for Obama that it might have been for another candidate 20, 40 years ago, something like that.
Yeah. I think the caller, I don't think I was too harsh on him, because I think that his point was that Islamists are infiltrating American politics, which is kind of off the wall there.
Well, that I agree with. Yeah. What I think he may have just been raising was questions about the role of religion in politics, yeah, more generally. But anyway.
You were being nice to him. I wasn't. Professor William Mayer is our guest, political science professor at Northeastern University. Let's talk a little bit more about how we choose the presidential nominee. Do we choose somebody who will become electable? Do we choose who Democrats and Republicans want? Or is this a system that's not working for us?
Well, it's a complicated process. It tends to it you know, how well does it work? Difficult to say sometimes, and the obvious rejoinder is compared to what? There's a lot about the system that is problematic. As I've said, the sheer length of time that it takes, and the time it diverts so many of these people, the fact that it diverts so much of their time from governing to campaigning. And in a similar way, I think that it's often the case that the candidates who might otherwise be interested in getting in look at the process and say there's no point in getting into that. I just don't feel like there's a Walter Mondale famously said in 1974 that he didn't want to spend 2 years of his life in Holiday Inns. Having on the more positive side, one can say that given the significance of the presidential office, it's pretty good that these people do get some significant exposure, and it does that. The combination of the way the primary process works generally ensures that the nominees are people who represent the major ideas and issue positions within their parties. To what extent does it value governing ability versus sheer electability? I think that often depends on the mood of the voters and the party activists. What exactly are they interested in?
Mm-hmm. But what about this idea of having these relatively small states, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, be at the beginning here and really determine the direction of this? Would we be better off with, I don't know, maybe a national day where every state had a primary or not?
Well, the problem with some, I mean, one of the leading alternatives to the current system, which always registers very well in public opinion polls, is a national primary. One of the problems with that is that it really would give a huge advantage to candidates who have a lot of money and who happen to get the attention from the press. All of the second tier candidates we've been talking about are going to be hard put to win under the current process, but they would find it impossible under a national primary. The nice thing about the states, the way it starts up, is that those states, particularly Iowa and New Hampshire, one thing you can say is that the activists in those states take their role very seriously. They give these candidates a close scrutiny, and they're willing to take the time to look at candidates like Edwards and Biden and Dodd, and not just be fascinated by Obama and Clinton. So, there really is much to be said, I think, for starting slow, starting small. I'm not sure that it has to be the same two states time after time. Mm-hmm. That would be one of my principal criticisms. The peculiarities of those states seem to be magnified every 4 years, and problems that, for example, we very rarely talk about the problems of big cities in presidential nominating mm-hmm. politics. Why? Because neither Iowa nor New Hampshire has what you would call a big city.
Yeah, right.
So I would like to see some kind of a situation where you'd spread it around a little. But the other thing you have to say is that those two states are so delighted with all the attention that they receive that they effectively, they will not yield their positions easily. And in the past, they've essentially blackmailed the candidates into agreeing to support their position in the nominating process.
Professor William Mayer, political science professor at Northeastern University, is our guest. We're talking about the nominating process with so much attention being given to Senator Hillary Clinton and Senator Barack Obama. What about these other candidates, second-tier candidates, the kind of scrutiny that both the first-tier candidates will be facing and the way we go about selecting our nominees is what we're talking about this hour. The phone number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, following the news from National Public Radio, Calvin Trillin will be with us, and he's written just this lovely book about his wife who died 5 years ago. She died on September 11th, actually. The book is about Alice. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Professor William Mayer, and we go next to Jack from Platteville. Hi, Jack.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
This is only a devil's advocate question, so it's not what I believe, but as far as, like, the Democratic Party, though, do you think that, this is my question, do you think that maybe they would look at as how well will Barako do in the southern states? Because as far as we've come, I think there's still going to be that hurdle that he has to get over. Not so much like in Louisiana, but I think you still have Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky, those states that maybe he may not fare well in.
Does he need to, Professor Mayer?
Well, as I think both Kerry and Gore showed, it is possible to win the presidency without winning a single southern state. And my guess, any Democrat is going to be hard-pressed to win a southern state. That was true of Gore, who was actually from the South. Kerry never really came close anywhere. The other side of the coin, and incidentally, as I say, it is a problem for any Democrat. I don't think that in the South, the major strike against Obama is his race. I think it's the fact that he's a liberal Democrat that is going to be his principal problem in the South. If anything, the fact that he is black may mobilize black voters in the South, who are the only real, or far and away the largest single constituent block that the Democrats have down there. The flip side, or the other side of the coin, is that if you add together the electoral votes from the 11 former Confederate states and throw in Kentucky and Oklahoma, you're talking about a pretty significant chunk of electoral votes. I think the number is about 180. And it's not, that's not 270, but it's pretty significant chunk of the way there. And I think Democrats do well when they can at least run competitively in the South. Bill Clinton, when he was elected president in 1992 and 1996, only carried about a third of the southern states. I think he carried four in both of his elections. But A, he carried four, and B, even in the other states that he didn't carry, he at least ran a competitive campaign. And he required the Republicans to put a lot of funding and effort and campaign time down in those southern states instead of just kind of taking them for granted.
Thanks, Jack, for your call. We go next to Tom from Hudson. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Hey, regarding the one caller on whether Obama is a Muslim, and I wanted to talk about quickly the importance of name recognition. And you picked up on this, Kathleen, but your guest kind of poo-pooed it. Baby Bush, he beat McCain only because he had the name Bush. Otherwise, McCain would have won in 2000. Hillary is only the front runner because of the name Clinton. If she would use the name Rodham, she wouldn't be a front runner. So now this guy who called in about Obama being a Muslim, the right-wing talk radio is talking about Obama rhymes with Osama.
Right, I know.
And middle name Hussein is the
right
other guy, the axis of evil. Name recognition is important, and marketing, and in this case it will sink him. And too bad it's that simple, but the GOP, if they can morph a popular Vietnam hero like Max Cleland into Osama, it's a piece of cake to do that to Obama with his name.
Well, to begin with, I don't think I think it's a pretty significant exaggeration to say they turned Max Cleland into Osama bin Laden. They raised, I think, some legitimate questions, not about his military service, but about what the kind of restrictions he was willing to put on the Homeland Security Department. Are they going to go after Obama? Yes. Just as the Democrats are going to go after whoever the Republican nominee in 2008 will be. I don't think whatever the Republican talk show hosts are saying, the notion that you can beat Obama by saying it rhymes with Osama, I think is highly, that won't work. If they're going to beat him, they're going to have to find some more legitimate, more substantive reasons for opposing him.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. Our guest is Professor William Mayer, political science professor at Northeastern University, who's written extensively about the nominating process. And we are talking about that process and about the front runners, the amount of money involved in running for president these days, and asking for your thoughts about all of this. We'll be talking a lot about all of this because the campaign looks like it's off to a pretty early start. Who's somebody who's under the radar right now, Professor Mayer? Who you think may emerge as a very intriguing and popular candidate, if there is such a person?
Well, I think John Edwards still has some potential. Mm-hmm. I think there were a lot of Democrats who thought he. Who liked him in 2004. I know Democrats who think that if Iowa had taken place about a week later than it did, that he would have won instead of John Kerry. And, of course, that might have given a whole different flavor to the rest of the race. I think he used the last 4 years, or the last 3 years anyway, to sort of give himself some additional credentials and to lay the groundwork for another campaign. My understanding, at least before Obama got into the race, he was doing pretty well in the polls I was seeing in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's one person who I would continue to watch.
And his attraction is what? What is it? Is it that he's admitted his vote on Iraq was wrong? Is it his addressing this inequality among the rich and the poor? Is it just his style that we find attractive, or what is it?
Well, it's he's a very to watch him on the campaign trail is to understand why he was a successful trial lawyer. He's very good at presenting himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little, if anything, too rehearsed. Sometimes I feel when I've seen him, but he's very good at it. I think he has managed to find some issues that appeal to a lot of Democrats. Obama's entry into the race makes, I think, some of that a little more problematic. But I think his sort of main theme in his campaign speeches in 2003 and 2004 was about two Americas and how one was getting ahead and one was falling farther behind, and the reality is more complicated. But I think there's a lot of Democrats who respond to that, and I think there's also a lot of Democrats who believe that the way they can win is by being the candidate, being the party of economic opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And he sounds some of those themes very well.
Yeah. I really like his wife. I just think that she's, we interviewed her some months ago. She's very genuine. She's had some great tragedy in her life. She just is, she's a really good person, I think. You know, very, just there. She must be a terrific asset to him on the campaign trail.
Well, that, increasingly, wives or spouses, because this year we'll see, I'm curious to see what the Clinton campaign does with Bill. I assume he will be doing something in the campaign, but I think, particularly in the general election, he's a lightning rod. He both for supporters and for detractors.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually haven't seen Edward's wife on the stump, so
she's good.
I don't have a strong sense of her.
Yeah, she's good. And the young children were very good with Cheeseheads on in Wisconsin a few years ago, too. Let's go next to Linda from Egg Harbor. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thank you. I just have a question. What do you think is the potential of Obama and Clinton becoming running mates should one or the other win the primary?
That's difficult to say. I suspect Hillary probably wouldn't be all that thrilled with being Obama's running mate, but Obama might well think it was quite attractive to be Clinton's vice president. It's a difficult thing to speculate on, and to begin with, none of these candidates at this point would ever admit that they would seriously think about being a vice presidential candidate, because that would be to undercut their presidential prospects.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that whether or not it has any possibility of coming true, I think, depends in part on how the race plays out, and in particular on how personal it gets. In 2004, relations between Kerry and Edwards never got all that testy. Whereas, for example, in 1984. You remember the two major Democratic candidates that year were Gary Hart and Walter Mondale, and they beat each other up so badly in the course of the nominating campaign and all the primaries that it was pretty near inconceivable that you could have put the two of them on the same ticket. And I'm curious to see as the campaign goes on. What each of the candidates is willing to do with each other. I think at least Bill Clinton's record was that he had a bit of an instinct for the jugular, and he had no problems with really going after Paul Tsongas in a pretty significant way if it was necessary to save his candidacy. And it wouldn't surprise me if Hillary had the same kind of perspective on Obama, that right now she's perfectly willing to say nice non-committal things about him, but if with 3 weeks left to go they're tied in the Iowa polls, she'll take off the gloves.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. April is next from Platteville. Hi, April.
Hi. About Senator Obama's religious background, in Time magazine on October 23rd, 2006, there's a wonderful excerpt from his memoir that he wrote called My Spiritual Journey, where he describes in full when he embraced the Christian faith at Trinity United Church of Christ.
It is, yeah, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted your listeners to know that.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, she confirms what I suspect it is, United Church of Christ. Jeff is next from Watertown. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, I was just wondering.
Speak up, Jeff. The connection is not so hot.
I was just wondering about Hillary Clinton's military background and how that would affect her. As far as I know, she hasn't had really any military background.
All right.
And in the past, the presidents have been where the candidates have been, you know, really attacked on their military background.
All right. Professor Mayer?
Well, she doesn't have any. But so far as I know, neither do any of the Democrats running this year, with the possible exception of John Kerry, who may or may not make another run for the White House. It's worth saying that I think under the circumstances, this is going to be a question that is raised of just about any candidate: is do they know anything about national security? Do they know anything about military affairs generally? And as one recognition of that, it's I think significant that when Senator Clinton got elected to the Senate, one of the first things she did was make sure that she was assigned to the Senate Armed Services Committee.
Yeah, and we're out of time. We got to go. Thanks very much for being with us, Professor Mayer. Professor William Mayer, political science professor at Northeastern University, who has written quite a bit about the nominating process. Thanks to him for being with us, to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio. Please stay with us for a wonderful story about love, the second hour of our program today. Copies of this show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. The program number 118D, and this is the Ideas Network.